Hey everyone, welcome back to the Spates Waterlad podcast. Massive shout out to Spates for bringing you this episode. I do know that you all love a good Spates, and whether that is the gold medal lager or the super popular Summit Ultra, maybe the old dark or even the Spates Zero, there is no wrong choice when it comes to choosing your Spates. But right now, it's time to sit back and enjoy this chat with a true legend, also while being super grateful for our major sponsor, Spates. Good on you, mate. What a lad. Well, the reality of this sport is that not every gifted young player gets to have the career that they hope for, and today's guest certainly fits that category. He was an age grade star. He played for the Wellington Lions as a teenager. He also made the Hurricanes wider squad when they won the competition. He was on his way to becoming a household name. Unfortunately, from then, he had a shocking run of injuries which led him to retire at the young age of 21. Tough one to take for any young man, so I'm looking forward to hearing how this man handled this through that tough time. He is, of course, the great lad himself, TJ Va'a. Welcome, mate.
Cheers to me, bro. Hell of an intro, bro. Thanks. I might have to clip that for me just whenever I'm feeling down about myself.
No, cheers, mate, bro. I'm stoked to have you on. Obviously a different rugby journey to many of my guests, but like I said, like not everyone can reach the ultimate dream, and obviously looking forward to hearing how you handled it and you got through your tough journey to be where you are now, obviously killing it with the RPA.
Yeah, bro. Now, I listened to the podcast with Tim Bateman a couple months ago, bro, and I thought there's a lot of power in the message that he was giving, and I think it's a reality for not just people who kind of went up through that high-performance area, but even people who didn't necessarily quite make it to that level. I think there's a lot of lessons and similarities between that, and so catching up with you a couple of weeks ago and then seeing the appetite, I suppose, for people to want to learn more about that journey or lessons that people learn, I think there's heaps of power in that, so keen as to rip into it, bro.
Mate, it's a massive space, like there's no doubt, and the message that I had from that Tim Bateman one, it sort of blown me away with how many people have struggled post-footy. And that's a lot of the guys who have got to the end of their career. So they've had an opportunity to get there. They knew it was coming. But for you, obviously to be taken away from you so young, it must be incredibly hard for you.
Yeah, because like you're saying, some people, they get to go through that journey on their own terms, however they want. Some people, overnight it works like that. Mine was a bit of a slow burn in that way. So it was pretty interesting. I mean, kind of went through, I say 4 years, I was in the professional environment, fully professional after leaving high school. And then of those 4 years, there was 6 months scattered around it where I could physically play the game of rugby.
True.
And so scattered in between all those moments, there was a lot of adversity and lessons that I kind of picked up on and then probably didn't even really absorb or fully comprehend until a few years out of the environment. Yeah, so I think in that first year, jumping in straight out of high school, I'd come off of a real, real successful, real happy kind of proud year going, leaving high school. I just signed with Wellington Lions at the beginning of the year. Beginning of year 13, it just kind of pivoted away from rugby league. I was going to go over and do the 20s with Melbourne Storm environment.
Oh, true.
Pivoted around to rugby just because the infrastructure was there. I'd learned a lot more through the camps, so I thought it'd be a easier pathway to go through and in my hometown as well. Jumped into the school's environment. We won my local high school, we won our first ever Wellington comp, went through, made the nationals finals. I was water with the secondary school's campaign. Off the back of that, we went into Condors sevens nationals, and I kind of we made the national final again. And then I had the honour of making that team again. And so coming off the back of that year, I think everything was really kind of prime and ready, and I'd felt that I was about to arrive in a way. I felt that I just gained a lot of confidence. It was something I'd believed in my entire life growing up, knowing that that was the journey I wanted to embark on, and those were the places I wanted to arrive on the way towards eventually wanting to become an All Black, and a great one at that. And so those realities, they in a way, kind of affirmed to me what I always believed in. And then so going into that first year out of high school, I was real keen to rip into things. Very first physical game after leaving high school, tore my ACL.
True.
Was playing sevens comp, just went for a cut and then just tried to step someone a bit too much. Ripped it apart. I had never experienced a major injury before. I think the longest during high school was like a 3-4 week hamstring. Mm-hmm. And then so I didn't even know how to explain what had happened. I basically told the doctors that I felt weightless between my knee mm-hmm. and the rest of my body. And it felt like it went around, felt like it ripped, and then in a way went back. So I didn't really know how to communicate that.
Yeah.
As well as I was in a bit of a denial, thinking like, nah, this isn't my fault.
Yeah.
I didn't do this. There's someone else's. You know, I've worked way too hard for this. So there's no way that something wild's happened to my leg straight out. And then it got misdiagnosed because I think there's a lot of me to blame in the way I communicated it. I mean, that doesn't sound like all that, you know, like a torn ACL. Got misdiagnosed that as a dislocated patella.
Oh, yeah.
So I worked 8 to 12 weeks on rehab for that, came back, and then inevitably I went again, felt the niggles again. And then after about 2 or 3 times of that, I think they were like, I think something's up. Of the experience of having torn my ACL.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I got to around midway through the year before it kind of got diagnosed that I went and got the scans and it was a torn ACL. And then in a weird way, I was excited when I found out because I finally got some closure on what was going on.
Mm.
But I also was like, oh, yeah, you know, you've been telling yourself your whole life this is what you want. This is, you know, one setback that's come on. What are you going to do about it? And I got excited at the thought of that. Because, you know, I was willing to work as hard as anyone and, you know, and be on the physical side of it as well. And so I kind of took that challenge with both hands and ripped into it. Fortunately, through that, during that time frame, I got picked up by the Hurricanes as well for that wider training going into the following season. Got the rehab done and kind of got to March the following year and I was ready to play again. So one thing that I always kind of took pride in off the back of that was the Hurricanes physio at the time. In my return to play, he said it was the best ACL rehab he'd ever seen and is in his career. That was, again, a lot of confirmation for me that I'm doing something right.
Mm.
And then the second game back, I hadn't even made it to playing 40 minutes. You know, you got to go through the return to play, yeah. 20, 40, all that. Yeah, tore it again. And so that shattered me. I just remember getting carried off on the club rugby game and I'm just in absolute tears, just head down. Yeah, like inconsolable. Kind of ripped me apart because I knew the sensation now. I knew what had happened. I knew exactly, you know, what I'd gone through and it kind of got confirmed a few weeks later after the scan. But the position I was in at the time, going into a under-20s campaign, that coming up, wanting to really, you know, not miss my second Mitre 10 season, I think that's what it was called at the time, with the Wellington Lions, and just a whole lot of rugby to want to play off the back of, I think it was probably 18 months now, where I hadn't really got to play much rugby. Tried to push through. There were some stories of athletes who had a torn ACL and rehabbed it around it, you know, built up the quad, the hammies, everything around it, and they were able to play through. And so being quite young and eager to want to, you know, make a name for myself in the environment, I just jumped into it and basically same stuff happened throughout the year. Luckily, I got an NZ20s campaign out of it. Yeah. Unfortunately, it was the worst at the time,
yeah.
The result that we got, but, you know, had an incredible experience with some of the guys in that environment. But, yeah, had about 2 more episodes of that happening to me throughout the year where the knee buckled again and basically it would start from square one with an 8-week rehab.
Far out.
Yeah, and then I eventually got to a position in between all the niggles to play for the Lions, come off the bench for a debut down against Otago, I think it was. Again, nowhere near my fittest. I'm trying to, you know, fight my way through, knowing I didn't have a good knee. I was pretty dusty, actually, in that game. So no clips of that. The following game, came off the bench. So I covered 9 for that first game, and then the following game I got to cover 10.
Oh, yeah.
And that was quite fun because that was my preferred position. I got to be out in the field a bit more. Played all right, got a bit of more confidence off the bench from that game, and then that next week I got to go into up north to the counties game. So this was my first time throughout that whole kind of experience where I was starting to string together games as a professional, not struggling to get into the academy games or club games just to get minutes under my belt.
Yeah. How was your knee feeling at this point?
No, I was buggered, bro.
Oh, true. Like,
oh, it tested strong, but mentally I didn't trust it at all. Mm. So I there were just clips of training throughout the weeks where someone would rush me on one side and I'd just buckle. I'd just go down because I was scared.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm brave. And so I think those are some pretty clear tests. Yeah. Something's probably not right, bro. So we went into that counties game and I came off the bench. It was a real tight game. It's probably like 20, 30 to go. I got a kick receipt and went to go to a bit of a counter-attack. Stepped off it, and I think Sean Treby was next to me at the time, and he says he just hurt it. He just hurt everything. And so the whole thing just kind of went apart. And then I think at that point it was like, you can't hold it together at this point. You need to go under the knife again.
Mm.
And so, yeah, went through that journey. And I think from that moment was probably where the mental battle kind of came in with everything, because I'd been holding it together in a way, not in the healthiest way either, but I'd been holding it together for so long that this was kind of the thread that unraveled things that I'd been trying to conceal or was neglecting in my own life.
Mm.
And yeah, from there, kind of, it was 22 months until I played my next game, just on top of injuries again.
Shit.
So it was kind of, yeah, through that 4-year period, it was a lot of injuries, a lot of long-term injured group in the gym by myself, and tiny hints or slithers of getting to experience what I really truly wanted.
Yeah.
Just couldn't even get onto the field to try and, you know, play for a jersey.
Yeah. How come you didn't get that knee surgery, like that second knee surgery earlier, even though you obviously felt like it wasn't right, like mentally you weren't trusting it? How come you didn't decide to get the surgery on it earlier before it did go?
Yeah, I think I alluded earlier, like there were examples of people who had done that, and I think being quite young and confident, I was like, oh, I will be one of those people. There was that aspect of it. I think I was in denial in a way.
Mm.
I didn't want to face it again. I didn't want to put myself back through that again, kind of knowing that this one's going to hurt a lot more, not physically, but just mentally to me. I think the weight of expectations as well that I'd put on myself and that I told myself that others were putting on me, knowing that you know, you were this kid who came into the environment, got a super contract off of not really playing that year, off of first 15 highlights in a way.
Yeah.
And coupled with wanting to try and feel like I fit in a way. I've had this sense of imposter syndrome this whole time I was in the environment because, and it had nothing to do with my environment, but it was the story I was telling myself, because I couldn't. You know, when you're in the high-performance environment, you can always back up on how you play and how you perform.
Mm.
I never had that pillar to rely on, even though I still believed that I could build it up and I could back it up eventually, one day. Or maybe I was delusional, who knows? But I think not having that pillar made me want to drive towards some other way to prove myself in a way.
Yeah.
And then that final part as well was being the coach's son of the Wellington Lions as well.
Yeah.
I think that was something that I was wanting to prove and also wanting to make the most of. Didn't know how long my dad wanted to coach there, what was going to happen, so really wanting to get in. So there's a lot that went into what now, looking back, is a very clear decision.
Yeah. So obviously your dad, Ilva'a, Samoan international legend, how much pressure was there following his sort of footsteps from a young age? You spoke about having a real drive to become an All Black, even a great one, at a young age. Where did that sort of come from? Was that from your old man, or where did that come from?
Yeah, I suppose the drive, it was never like, I don't think it was ever a moment in my life where my dad told me he wanted me to pursue this.
Yeah.
It was always very internally driven.
Mm.
But in my environment, I was definitely surrounded by a lot of great athletes growing up.
Mm.
So you know, you talk about that whole you know, people can't be what they can't see. I was surrounded by it constantly, and I saw great All Blacks, and I saw great international rugby players and NRL stars growing up out of Wainuiomata as well. You know, that's a very clear pathway that that I was shown, or that I was kind of around, and so I just wanted it. That coupled with the fact that I loved playing, loved the game. You know, some of my earliest memories running up and down my nan's hallway, just playing rugby by myself with a ball, getting told off for making all this noise, you know. So I never felt like he or anyone in my family ever told me that this is what we expect of you. But it was the stories, again, that I was telling myself that I expect this of myself, but I also want it. So it kind of became intertwined in a way. And as I began to see results, I think that was that expectation that slowly started to come in as well.
Yeah, when were those results? Was that from a real young age? Were you really talented as even a five-year-old?
No, I wasn't really talented. I was just really keen, real competitive and always, like, looking for the edge.
Yeah.
So even from, like, a young age, I was always fully immersed in it. I was watching the games. I was watching highlights of Dan Carter, Benji Marshall. Not just because I liked watching. I was like, oh, how could I do this? How could I bring this in? And so, yeah, there were aspects of it.
And then your big break was, you've spoken about it already, but Scots College. That's where you really, I guess, was it noticed by everyone in New Zealand? You had a stacked team that year, Umanga Jensen twins, Connor Garden Bashup, Alex Fido. I remember coming to watch one of your games at school. 1 year, and man, you guys were a pretty talented group.
Yeah, looking back, now you can see the pathways that people went on. You're like, oh, heck, this was a stacked team. But at the time, none of us had, you know, kind of made a name for ourselves or made reps teams or been the superstars of those reps teams. So we didn't really understand what we had in front of us at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you know, being coached by my dad as well, I think he kind of put all the infrastructure and the game plans and everything around us that when we started to believe it and we saw it, then things kind of blew up from there.
Yeah. And were you playing league at the time, the same time?
Yep. Yeah. It was a real common thing for heaps of people out in Lahat Wainui. Well, you know, a lot of kids who were kind of in and around the league environments as well, is that you'd grow up playing rugby union on the Saturdays and then league on the Sundays. And then I think Tuesday, Thursday was the rugby trainings, Monday, Wednesday was the league trainings. And it was just a real nice way to stay around and just jam with all your friends, really.
And how close, you mentioned the Melbourne Storm, how hard was that decision for you to stay in Wellington, or was the temptation to go over there and be part of that Melbourne Storm under-20s?
That was actually an easy decision in the end, only because, like I was saying before, I wasn't fully immersed in league probably from the age of 14 onwards. And even though I was a league kid through and through growing up, I didn't even start playing rugby until I was about 10. So it was rugby league that I loved.
Oh, yeah.
That was where I learnt to play. But I learnt so much around how to play the game of rugby union. And I'd been so immersed in those environments growing up, even though I was going to the Storm camps every summer. Those 2 weeks were the only snippets of real, you know, competitive rugby league I was around. So that compared to a full year of all these environments, it was quite easy by the time I got to the age of 17.
Do you ever think, what if, or does your mind ever go down that route?
Oh, like, yeah, 100%. Not even just around rugby league, just there's so many what ifs, all this stuff in sports. But I'm completely at peace with what happened, so I don't think it's something I dwell on. It's more like a fun thing to think about, because I love watching the Melbourne Storm now.
Just think, mate, that should be me out there.
I just appreciate what those guys
should
go through.
Should be me, like, and Jerome Hughes.
They scared me, bro. Their trainings were crazy. Like, to this day, the hardest thing I'd ever been around.
Oh, wow. Oh, true.
So it's I have a deeper appreciation rather than any resentment or anything.
Yeah, true. I suppose you weren't able to do too many pre-seasons anyway, were you? You're always injured.
I was king of the rower, really, in the pre-season.
Well, it's interesting how you mentioned the imposter syndrome, especially like going into the Hurricanes environment. Like you said, signed pretty much on schoolboy highlights, not being able to train or play or prove yourself must have been incredibly hard for you mentally to feel like you belonged.
Yeah, 1,000%. I think I always kind of struggled with that sense of belonging in all the high performance environments I was in after school, purely because my whole life I'd kind of hung my hat on being able to rely on proving myself through performance.
Mm.
So when that was no longer there, and I was so accustomed to having the status of just falling back on that, I'd kind of actually start to consider, like, where does my value derive from?
Mm.
And that was a real, you know, long journey. I really struggled in the environments because I never felt like I found my place.
Mm.
And again, nothing to do with the environments. It was all the stories I was telling myself internally. I think there's a saying that I really began to draw on as I left the environments, was around, like, if you seek nourishment from external validation, you'll be hungry forever.
Oh,
and that was something, when I look back, was clearly something I was looking for, because I was accustomed to it, and then I had never really sat with myself and figured out what am I about, what I really enjoy away from the game of sports.
Mm.
And so as I began to navigate that journey in the few years where I was injured, I can see so clearly now me doing things and being someone that I wasn't in a way to try and fit in, and putting a mask on to console in a way, and to try and force that belonging rather than intrinsically figuring out what's important to me, who's important to me, why it's important.
Yeah.
And then naturally the people around me will align with that.
Mm.
That's something that, yeah, again, not until I kind of decided to step, remove myself from those environments, was I able to kind of see clearly and get that full view.
What example, like what sort of things were you doing that you felt like you were just doing to fit in? Like,
naturally I'm a reserved and introverted person.
Yeah.
When I look back at so many of my memories around the sporting environment, I was trying to be a voice. I was trying to be the joker. Because I was just trying to, again, seek that sense of belonging and acceptance from people.
Yeah.
So that was an example, and an extension of that was then going out and partying.
Yeah.
Which to me now so clearly is like, I'd much rather just have a movie night with my fiance and like, or with my sister and my nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably more just around that side of things, just trying to be someone I wasn't.
Mate, that's interesting. And you spoke about like that second knee surgery, how hard that was for you mentally. Like, what was the toughest challenges there for you?
It was purely the mental stuff. Because the physical stuff was things I'd been through again. There were tiny differences that second time around, and took longer. But it was, for me, it was mentally. Probably in that final year of high school, I started to feel random bouts of anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just the weight of the world on me, and then because it was the weight that I'd put there on myself. And then I never really explored that. I never asked myself, why am I doing that? Why am I feeling that? I just let it be.
What is that feeling?
For me, it's in my experience when it came with that stuff around anxiety, it was I just feel like I've got so much to do in such a little time.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's out of my control. You know, physically sweaty, fast, high heart rate, can't think clearly. And then off the back of that, I'd want to kind of separate myself from others and also feel shame in a way of that. But so I first felt elements of that in high school as I was going through, but I never did anything about it. And then little parts of that kind of came out during those first few years, especially as I was trying to find that comfort and that belonging of wanting to be around someone or something or a group that I felt accepted me. And then that second surgery, it really kind of brought out all the things that were under the surface that I'd been holding in. I had to get that surgery on my 20th birthday, I think. The morning, and that really broke me. Couldn't really be around my family, and I was already doing something that, you know, shattered me. And then over that year, I just started to kind of go into a bit of a, I removed myself from the supportive environments, and I took myself to the environments where I thought would help me grab quick, easy senses of belonging. On the surface, it looked like me hanging out with people or hanging around in temporary groups that weren't really what I was about. You know, coping in different ways, different substances, drinking, going out, anxiety shooting up now, coming it in more frequently and for longer. Me just really wallowing in a way. And it got to a point where I knew it was actually really clear to someone in the environment that I was struggling. That person reached out to me and offered support and helped me kind of talk about it and then find pathways that were available or resources that are available to me. So I went to therapy through that time because I was really struggling with that sense of, you know, what's my purpose now that I can't rely on this pillar I'd built my whole life around. And that really helped me to begin to see the signs of why, of when I was beginning to spiral. I was able to kind of build a game plan around that, learn more about myself during that process as well. And as I kind of navigated through the highs and the lows in that year, it got to the following preseason. And in the lead up to it, I flew over to Japan where my dad was now coaching. My mum and my little sister were there. I spent the off season with them and just trained the house down from there, filling my cup, being around my family the whole time. And then kind of came back to New Zealand off the back of that, had all these kind of processes in place, or I'd really built out my understanding of myself and kind of was ready to rip into that preseason because I was getting close to being able to play. And then, yeah, I got to do the Surf to Peak for the first time in 3 years.
Lucky.
But I took a lot of sense of pride in it because that was one of the first areas I got to compete with everyone, and that was something I missed a lot, being able to fully compete. I finished with the best time in my position, and so that's something that meant a lot to me at the time. I got an award for the preseason for best skills, which at the time, when you're in the environment, it's not really that big a deal at all, but it meant so much to me at the time.
Yeah.
Because, again, it was one of the first moments where I felt like I could compare and compete.
So how did you get that Hurricanes contract with all these injuries? Did you say year three in the Hurricanes?
Yeah. So after that, because I signed the first year, 2015, going into 2016 for a 1 year wider.
Yeah.
And then I think just through the moments of them seeing how hard I was working, but also seeing the moments when I was playing and what I was able to get myself back to for the NZ20s campaign.
Oh, yeah. You got a 2 year.
I signed from there, 2 years from there.
Oh, that's cool.
And then it was out basically for those 2 years. Yeah.
So you did your Surf to Peak.
Yeah. Got that sense of pride over kind of being able to compete again. I came back. And then the first time I was close to being able to be named for something for the Canes, Boydie told me that I was going to be able to play at the 10s. What was it, the Brisbane?
Oh, yeah, Brisbane 10s. Yeah.
Would be able to play in the following preseason. And then I think there was one more after that. And depending on performances, you go in there and you could be on the bird to South Africa.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I was like, I actually see a light now towards the end of this tunnel. And so, you know, things felt great. Everything was kind of firing on all cylinders, I thought, in a way. And then I tweaked my hamstring kind of going into that Brisbane 10s week, and that really hurt for a bit. But it was only like a 3 or 4 week, and that was like a blink of an eye to me at that point. And then working back through that return to play, completely tore my hamstring from there. That put me out from like, I think it was 8 to 12 weeks. And then this moment here was like the thing that just kind of just shattered everything for me. And the lights went out basically. I was doing return to play again. Doing a bit of a one-on-one drill. So just doing a bit of agility, and got past the ball. You had to have a go against the defender. I turned the corner. It's up against Chase Dietze, who's a close friend of mine as well. I just remember it vividly. I just went to kind of goose step in a way. My hamstring went, and I went to buckle. Oh, I went to support myself, and then my knee went, and I tore my meniscus on the other leg. So I went to stand up, and I just couldn't stand, and I was confused as. And then that year, the lights, I don't really remember much of that year. The lights just went out where the fire, like, just went out, just not in regards to sport, just in general. That really hurt. So I honestly can't tell you how we went as a team that year in that Canes environment. I remember snippets of kind of what went on, but I was in a deep, deep hole. I remember moments. Something that really calls out to me was Dane Coles came around one, I think it was straight after actually when he heard it happened, and came to console me. But as people would know who've been in those spaces, when that switch is turned, sometimes even though the help's there, you're not willing to take it.
Mm.
And I was so far gone at that point. So the next months are a blur really. Did all the rehab, eventually got back to playing for the first time in those 22 months. But
was that 22 months?
Yeah, from the second ACL surgery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, forced myself to play. I couldn't sprint. I refused to sprint, both, I think, physically still, but mentally I just wouldn't put myself there.
Mm.
Went into the Lions campaign, and I just knew I just couldn't run physically. Mentally was in a horrible place. And then say, contractually, I was coming off contract, and the passion wasn't there anymore. Mm. And it was kind of at a point where I felt that everything it was taking away rather than giving at this point. Not at any fault to the game or anything or the people, the environment. It was, I had just gotten so wrapped up in this hole where I couldn't see the joy anymore in it. And so I think a few weeks into the Lions campaign, I asked them to release me on my contract. And then, released me from there. And then the plan was I was going to step away and work on myself mentally, physically rebuild myself again, and then jump back into it. But the way it ended up turning out was that, all that stuff worked out great. I went through such a healing journey. But physically, as I still had, two more surgeries I had to still get done just from ongoing niggles. Whenever I tried to rebuild myself again to want to play, I'd come across adversity again. And then the desire was no longer there where I was willing to continue to push.
Mm.
So I'd get keen, I'd get a niggle, and then I kind of lose the excitement of it again.
Yeah.
And that kind of went on for another 2 years. And then just because of all the other things I'd been exploring in my life, I began to find excitement in other areas. And then kind of as rugby went down and tried to go back up and would go back down, other areas of my life just grew and kind of just took it from there. And then, it's been hell of a go since then.
Mate, that is a brutal injury toe, eh?
Yeah,
someone so young. So you were, 21?
Yep.
Or 21 when you retired?
Yeah, far out. Because I didn't think of it as
you never really, never really retired. We still haven't really. You might be back. You might get that burning desire again. So how old are you now?
26 now.
26, still so young. So, mate, that's crazy. What did you miss most about the game, like when you did retire? Or were you just like, not even interested in it anymore? How'd you feel about the game once you had sort of moved away from it?
Yeah, bro, I'd lost complete interest in the game. Mm. Didn't care to watch anything. One, for the first few years, first couple years, it was more out of pain, not caring to watch it. But then as I kind of went through my own journey and healed and could kind of look at it without that emotion and surrounded by it, I just found that I wasn't actually as interested anymore.
Mm.
But in terms of what I miss, the number one thing I miss, and because this is the only thing I miss really, is being able to go out and jam on a whim, any point, go play a game of flag, go play touch, race my mates if we're arguing when we're drinking.
Yeah. So you can't like do what you can do nothing now. Can't run.
I can build towards it, but I just, there's still so much trauma around some of the areas where I'm not willing to push myself that much anymore.
Yeah.
And in the sense of flag and touch and stuff, there's still so many similarities in cutting and sprinting that it takes me a lot to get just there.
Yeah.
So I just don't have as much energy to get there. And that was something I really struggled with leaving the environment then, was continuing to take care of myself physically.
Mm.
Growing up the entire time and being in that environment, it was always geared to being the best player.
Mm.
I was never someone who loved my PB numbers or was trying to win the surf to peak. I was trying to be the best player, and through doing that, I was going to tick off the boxes that you gave me.
Yeah.
And I'd be disciplined about it, and I'd commit to it. But when that fire was no longer there, or that end goal was no longer there, I really struggled with my relationship with the physical side because it was always geared towards one thing. And so going to the gym seemed pointless, to me, because I was like, but I'm not trying to play.
Yeah.
Never mind just general health. So that had been something I'm still kind of navigating. It's successful the last 6 months or so, but checking in a year or so. I don't want to speak too soon, but I'm working my way through it.
Yeah.
That's something I really found hard after leaving.
Mate, I was the same. Like, it's probably the biggest thing for me is trying to find time to do physical exercise, something that, you know, you're forced to do throughout your career. Not forced, but it's part of your program. It is every third day or second day you're doing weights or conditioning or whatever it is. So to have the option to do that or not, always choosing not at the moment.
Yeah. And then on the other side of that was my relationship with food, because again, the discipline side was geared towards, I'll take care of my skin, ease everything so that I can be the best athlete.
Yeah.
But then when that was no longer there, I felt like all these kind of limitations around what I could eat, how much I could eat, it was gone. And so as I went away from that, I went away towards that. And then as well as, like, you know, going out and drinking and partying more. So
yeah,
I didn't really know how to navigate it and limit myself, because I didn't feel like I had a physical goal anymore.
Yeah. Mate, you're in good shape considering no exercise and eating all sorts.
The last 6 months I've definitely been on a journey to figure that stuff out, but it's been tough going back and forth.
Mate, it's crazy. And then you mentioned when the rugby came down, the other side of your life came up. So what was that? What did that look like?
Yeah, so, you know, the blessing through all of the injuries was that I had the time to do all my study throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I decided to leave that environment, I had 1 full year's worth of uni papers left to get my degree. And so in that following year, I went back to uni, studied that, immersed myself more around the environment and the people that were there, the people that I'd never really given time to, because I was like, I'm here just to do, you know, tick a box.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not here.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely here. And so I got to discover more around that environment. I've, you know, made friends with people that I wouldn't typically spend more time around, because I was always in and out doing the bare minimum to get there. Off the back of that, went to some, you know, uni event nights with one of my mates who dragged me along, and then heard about this cool as internship opportunity through an organisation called Tupitoa. So it helps uplift representation of Māori Pasifika in the corporate sector. And I was like, oh, this seems so cool. And I was like, oh, and I'm finishing my uni degree soon, I should probably look into this stuff now. And so I went along to it. And then through chasing that curiosity and being more interested in things now, or letting myself be more interested in things, found myself going through that and picking up an internship in that summer. Got matched with a place called Deloitte, who at the time I didn't really know anything about.
Yeah.
Started a strategy consulting internship and aligned with my degree and what I talked about in my internship interview, what I enjoyed. And I talked about back in the sports environment, I loved strategy. I loved fixating around a plan that's going to help us succeed on whatever that version of success meant to us. And being able to adapt to changing pictures, you know, stuff like that. And those just happened to align with, you know, what they were looking for at the time. So I picked up that and then went into another completely different environment of people who I never would have been immersed around wouldn't have let myself immerse myself around them.
Yeah.
And then just made such good friends with so many different characters, you know, completely old, way older than me, younger than me. Learned to be at peace with myself as well through this journey of wanting to heal as well alongside all of that. And then, yeah, just through that, I just kept chasing that curiosity and finding myself in these cool environments. Off the back of that internship, I did some work out of my local community, was being able to support some of the at-risk students at the local high school. I went back to Deloitte, started on the grad program in the actual strategy consulting group. Went on a bit of a journey in all these different areas. Even started to take more awareness around what I would do with my spare time. Found myself watching YouTube videos of, you know, how they made certain movies or what it meant by that. Or find myself wanting to clip together videos, take film photos of my family and capture those moments and learning how to pick up on those skills.
Yeah.
And just by being more aware of that, I was able to understand more, like, oh, I actually have hobbies and interests.
Yeah.
That was something I really struggled to answer or hated people would ask me when I was in the environment.
Like, the player profile. What's your hobbies?
Movies and family with me, the coach. But like, now I understood more around why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Or I'd take more awareness around that.
Mm.
And so through that journey, I just, yeah, I found so many different interests.
Yeah. And you mentioned your healing process throughout all this time. What does that look like? What does the healing process look like?
So staying on with therapy.
Yeah.
After a bit of time of kind of going probably backwards after I initially left, because I felt like just I'd opened myself up to this world and was like, what is going on?
Mm.
And then coped with it in my own unhealthy ways at the time. I then went back to regular therapy to talk about things and to learn to unravel why maybe I derived so much value from this or from that, or why it meant so much when someone said a passing comment about something and why it would hold up for weeks. And then looking for the trends of what would I usually do after that, and just kind of watching that cycle of, you know, bad habits just turn into a feedback loop. So, yeah, I mean, along that journey, like, I went to a therapy class once with my mum. Not class, sorry. A therapy session with my mum, because I felt it so hard to talk to my loved ones about what I was going through, because I didn't want to burden them with the weight of what I thought were my problems. But, you know, in reality, as I went through that and we, you know, went through this journey together, I was able to see it was actually something that helped them get into the mind of what was going on with me. And I didn't have to hold shame over it regardless of what I was thinking because it was all meaning that I'd attached to it. So, you know, doing things like that, being very over communicative with how much I loved my friends and family.
Yeah.
Because I began to show that gratitude and appreciation for what was going around. So, yeah. And I think just sitting with myself a lot, during uni, you know, just because I still held shame about, like, oh, last year I was here, now this is what I'm doing.
Yeah,
no one knows who I am. All this stuff I'd relied on. I began to sit with my thoughts, and off the back of what I was learning in different environments, whether it be my personal relationships or my relationship with my therapist, I was able to begin to unravel it myself as well. And over time, just picked up more tools, listened to more people, you know, read more books around the, kind of that journey. And over time, it began to make more sense to me. I think something I really, an image I always love when they talk about therapy is, like, if you look at a knotted piece of string, it's just kind of your mind before going to therapy. Afterwards, all it is just very clearly unraveled. And that's how, I think that sentiment really captures how I feel through that process, is that it just helps me understand why this equals this. And over time, you can help yourself become more self-aware and continue to learn more and unravel. And off the back of that, you can be more intentional and conscious with the decisions you make off the back of that, and if it does or doesn't align with who you want to be and what's important to you.
Mate, it's so cool. I love that. And you mentioned around sort of the downhill spiral. What does that look like? You mentioned drugs, alcohol. What did it look like for you?
Yeah, just more heightened versions of those things that I was saying that I experienced during the sports environment. I felt like I had no limit on this stuff now.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, would just go out, would party all the time, would socialize all the time, despite the fact it took so much energy away from me.
Yeah.
Muck around with drugs, temporary relationships with different people. It's things that didn't align with who I am and what's actually important to me, but in a way I didn't know
what
was important to me as well. So I was lost. So I just tried to find solace or quick hits of love or affection or connection from other areas.
And you mentioned your mate who noticed that, helped you. What did he say? Because you see it all the time with people who you know aren't quite dealing with something very well. How did he help you? How did he convince you to go to therapy or get you back on the straight?
So he told me I looked like shit one day. Straight up as that.
Yeah.
And then he could kind of see that I was hurting. But him opening up that kind of channel where I could tell he cared in his own funny way, that was all I needed. I just needed someone to ask how things were going from a different environment, and then I opened up and then was able to figure out what it was that, what I could begin to do to help myself.
Mm. That's cool. And then your role now, want to speak to me about what you're doing now. You work for New Zealand Rugby Players Association. What does that look like?
Yeah, so the role I'm doing at the moment, it's officially called the Learning Development Project Manager. So they've created this awesome as online platform and app called The Hub. And so the whole premise around it is to create short, interactive, engaging modules and courses that provide all the professional rugby athletes in New Zealand key information, resources, contacts, for key topics in the personal development program. Mm. And so let's talk about the personal development program. You'd know, and those who are in the rugby environment would know, is you get about, I think it was a half a day a week in your contract dedicated towards personal development. And that in itself is freaking awesome. Like the fact that is there to protect, you know, the welfare of athletes and help them prepare themselves for either life beyond footy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in and around areas of your well-being, your finances, your career, education pathways, your skills, your opportunities that you want to explore off the back of that. It's all mini courses and modules that you can, as an athlete, go towards yourself or work with your personal development manager to complete and work through and explore if this is a topic that, you know, you're really interested in. You can learn more about it. But in the meantime, here are some very short courses and straight to the point answers that are going to help you. And it kind of comes into fruition through like mini videos, interviewing multiple players, talking about their lived experience with that topic, interviewing subject matter experts on this topic to give you the cold and hard facts around it. It's been a real exciting role, real awesome place to hop into. The environment is awesome. The organization, learning so much from everyone in that environment. Mm-hmm. But I think the way I found myself there kind of extends to what I was talking about with those different areas of interest I had after leaving, was that I was really enjoying myself and have had a really great job at Deloitte as a strategy consultant. But I was kind of getting to a point where I could either decide to work my way up the line again and, you know, work for a certain promotion maybe, or I could kind of pivot off of that and look for something that has a bit more meaning to me. I loved aspects of the work we did there, but I couldn't see myself long-term being able to work across all those different, you know, banking and insurance sector pieces of work that would come across it. But when I thought of the prospect of doing something in and around sports, that 100% kind of aligned with me. I fully believe in the power that sports has to like bring together communities, to teach you valuable life lessons, I think it's a really great force for change, and it was something that I was raised around my entire life, and it's another way I can kind of relook and still take value from all those aspects of growing up that I thought was only meant to be a player.
Yeah.
And so jumping into this space, I just find I have endless energy around it because I truly believe in the power of it.
Mm. So you see yourself doing this long term, or what's the next sort of 5-10 years look for you?
Yeah, 100% see myself being able to play around in the sports industry long term. Next 5-10 years, it's just continuing to get around all the leaders in and around all the shot callers, all the influential people in the environments I want to get around. Something that a saying I really took with me when I went into Deloitte was, if you're the smartest in the room, you're in the wrong room.
Oh, mate, so I like your sayings. It's three of the greats.
So that message in it really helped me see the power of learning from anyone, regardless of what situation I'm in. But now I'm just being a bit more intentional, knowing that I know I'm going to be here long term. Who around here can I continue to learn from and put me in a position that aligns with what I've talked about with my purpose of what one of my purposes with, using the power of sport to drive social, educational, health outcomes for people.
I'm surprised you've stayed in this room with me for so long. Yeah, you're in the wrong room, mate. You're too smart for me. But what a journey. Anyway, we've gone to our Instagram for some questions. Lots have come in. I think you chucked it up on your page, so lots of personal ones, I think. So we'll see what we Skip get from a few of these. Ask him about his scar on his forehead. I've never noticed a scar on your forehead.
If it's what I know they're talking about. So at the end of our NZ20s campaign, obviously I was coming off the back of some dusty play. and it wasn't, you know, the best result at the time for New Zealand under-20s. And so, again, talking around the, you know, those coping mechanisms I had at the time, I just wanted to go out and drink and forget about it and blur it all out.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the tournament, we went out, we had a massive time, but I just didn't know how to, you know, stop.
Yeah.
Just kept going. And it got to a point where the boys were trying to take me home. And I was just trying to be a hero and just ran off. I was like, I'm all good. Sprinted off and went head first into a pole and just ripped my head up. And so one of the boys, he says to this day, he thought I was dead because of how limp I was. Took me up and I was still trying to be a hero. We get back to the hotel and I'm trying to run off and just be a pest. And I just like rock my head up against the elevator door and I just... So I had this lump in my head. I honestly reckon it was for like 9 months. Like, it didn't look like it was a bruise necessarily, but it was just like this lump that was there
True.
For ages. So I'm pretty sure that's what...
Yeah, sounds about right. That is a sloppy drunk.
Yeah. Yeah, a sloppy kid at the time. Didn't, yeah.
And was that what you're like, even like through this whole journey when you did go down that downhill spiral? Were you pretty sloppy drunk like that?
It didn't always look like sloppy. I just wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know, I was trying to make up for everything so much by pretending to be someone else. So I was just very outgoing.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay, next one. Worst bit of advice your dad gave you? Can't be much of that, mate.
Yeah.
Earl was my coach, mate. He's one of the greats, wasn't he?
I'd say when he tells me to always aim for the right sticks when you're kicking, because I never get it. I think there's more to do with me than it is him.
Okay. You might have mentioned this one before when you spoke about delete those footage, but ask him about his famous kick against Southland at Westpac.
So there's another one of the dusty comebacks. That was in the year when I was like a couple, I think it was maybe 2 weeks leading up to leaving the environment.
Oh yeah.
Asking to get my contract kind of taken away. I think we were lining up on their 22. So you know, not far out from the try line. Boys are throwing all these different calls at me, and you know, I'm just like trying to just hold it all together being on there. And then Ben Lamb passes the message and he's on the right wing.
Yeah.
Right wing, he's like, cross kick.
Yeah.
And me just having no confidence at whatsoever. I was just like, yeah, sweet. And then I'm pretty sure it landed like 10 meters behind where we were. It was just, yeah. At the time, that shattered me. But looking back, it's crack up.
Yeah. And you haven't played since. Yeah.
That was the moment I decided to hang it up.
Okay, this one's from legend Pity Weepu. Any ambitions to come back in league or rugby?
Not to come back. Not to try and pursue any goals around that space. I would love to play with my brother and cousins for Wainui Rugby League, though.
Oh yeah.
Probably before they're able to. before they can't play anymore, because I've probably got 10, 15 years on them. Yeah, that'd be something cool, because again, I think I alluded to it before, like growing up in Wainui, it was the greatest community to be around, and all my I was privileged in having all my family around me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had so many opportunities to, like I said before, just go out and jam, play Sunday touch with all of them, flag on the Wednesdays with them, random sevens tournaments throughout the whole year and nines tournaments. So being able to recreate those moments, that would be real cool.
Mm-hmm.
Probably minus the highlight reels now.
out on the wing now.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, next one. Best Buller Street memory.
Oh, I probably don't have any best Buller Street memories because they're all so blurry from it. So, yeah.
Was that your flat when you were injured?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, that's where I kind of went to when, yeah, as I was talking about how I was going out and about and just, yeah.
I can't remember a thing. Okay, ask him about the Kendrick Lamar trip. Don't remember this one either.
No, no, this one was, this is actually really cool because, well, it's, depending on how you look at it, might be horrible. But, so Peter Munger Jensen and I, we were real keen to go down and watch Kendrick Lamar, but I think it was down in Dunedin with the Hurricanes. And it was like a Wednesday night or something, or it was a Tuesday night down in Dunedin during the middle of the campaign. We were hundies talking about whether or not we wanted to do it, and I'm pretty sure we talked to TJ Perenara around it as well. And he was like, "Come on, you know, you guys are young, go for it. It's on, you know, the Wednesday should be the rest day anyway, so take the risk." Like, you know,
yeah.
In a way, it felt like he gave our blessing. And so we went away, but in the week leading up, the schedule changed.
Oh,
so the Wednesday was a full-on heavy-ass day, like D-Day and everything. And so we went down, like, had a mean time, flew back at 6 a.m., ready for, I think it was 8:30 in team meeting and training, and there was hard-ass day. Great memory, glad I did it, but yeah, worth it. didn't play out the way we expected it to.
Well, at least you got your early flight and you're back into it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Right, that's good stuff. Okay, what piece of advice would you give your younger self?
Just be more curious. See what you're interested in. I was so determined from a young age of the one pathway I wanted to go down. I didn't really look up and look around and ask myself why. Why I'd be interested in other areas. So that's probably, yeah, the biggest thing I'd give to my younger self is that there's so much more to life than something that's still very clearly passionate for you.
Mm.
But there's, you know, yeah, there's so much more you can be learning. Talked before how it struggled with that whole purpose and then going into the physical side of things. It was the same thing. Like, my purpose was fully derived from sport growing up. And so if I could talk to my younger self, it would be around just kind of reframing the way you look at life. Because even when I was ticking all the boxes of study, healthy relationships, you know, taking care of my savings, those were all built on one pillar around rugby, where in reality it's supposed to be side by side.
Yeah.
So when this one crumbled, everything else crumbled because of the way I'd looked at the world.
Mm.
So that'd be, I could talk to myself.
Jeez. That's good advice for a young TJ Va'a. Okay, two more. He does a great rendition of Toot It and Boot It by Yah. Would love to hear it.
No, <it's not. laughs> That's a
Is that a song? I don't even know it.
Yeah, it was a song that we all loved in the boarding house.
Oh, true.
Oh, one of my mates loved it. I never liked it.
Go on. Okay, last one. Best piece of advice you have for a Waterlad listener? You gave some to the younger self, but now just for the general Waterlad listener out there.
Man, shoot. I would go to that curiosity one, but I've used it. So, just don't fear failure of what you're wanting to go through. Going off the back of wanting to explore other areas in your life, sometimes the only way to find out what you want to do is finding out what you don't want to do. So if you're more curious in that space and you accept that some things aren't going to work out, as long as you take the lessons that you pull from it, then it isn't a waste of time.
Yeah.
And yeah, you should embrace aspects of failure rather than fear it.
Mate, best ever. Curiosity, fear of failure. Oh, so good. Mate, absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. Like, there's part of that journey which I'm just like, man, I'm so gutted that you had to go through all of that. Never got to see you really where you probably belonged under the big lights on the TV on a Friday, Saturday night. But awesome to hear how you've gone through those struggles and got to where you are and in a really good space. So, mate, awesome to hear you open up and talk so honestly about that. I think so many guys will get so much out of that, especially anyone going through an injury. if they're feeling sorry for themselves going through one hammy injury, I can, like, they only have to listen to this to feel probably grateful for not having to go through what you did. But I really appreciate you coming on, being so open, and giving up your time, mate.
No, thanks, bro. Honestly, awesome to be here. I love that that there's that the appetite for people to want to hear and learn and listen to that transition journey and the adversity that comes with wanting to pursue a life in high-performance sports. So appreciate it, bro. It's been
mate. Mate, you're a lad.
Cheers, bro.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. And if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can. And also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode.